This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
Sir, we have an executive order for your attention on the very important subject of election integrity. We believe that this executive order is the farthest reaching executive action taken in the history of the Republic to secure our elections. Among numerous other aspects of this executive order, this is going to cut down on illegal immigrants on the voter rolls, ensure that the Department of Homeland Security and the data that they have available is being fully weaponized to ensure that illegal immigrants aren't voting. This will include a citizenship question on the federal voting form for the first time. This executive order instructs the EAC to cut federal funding to states that don't take reasonable steps to secure their election. This calls on the Department of Justice to vigorously prosecute election crimes, particularly in states that we don't believe are in compliance with federal law around election integrity. I could go on and on for a while, sir, but the compliance with National Election Day rules, cracking down and investigating and prosecuting foreign interference in our elections, revoking President Biden's Executive Order 14019, which essentially weaponized government to corrupt and pollute our election process. There's a lot in here, but we believe that these are very important steps that we need to be taking as an administration at your direction to ensure that our elections are as secure as they possibly can be.
Will Scharf, our guy there, reading over or kind of clarifying over the shoulder of Donald Trump and putting himself in a position to explain exactly how this executive order from Donald Trump is going to secure our elections here in the future. I want to get to our guest. We've got Zach Smith with us today. Hans has the day off, and we're always excited to have Zach on the show. He is the legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, also co-host of SCOTUS 101. Zach, welcome back. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me on the show today, Annie. I always joke I am a poor man's Hans von Spakovsky, but happy to play that role any day of the week.
No, not at all. We love having you here, and we know you know your stuff. One of the things that Donald Trump has been saying very consistently through, December of 2020, about the election is he thinks they're unsecure. He's got questions with them. But now that he is back in his second term, he gets the opportunity to do something about it. I'm sure that there will be legal challenges to the executive order he signed. But Zach, what can you tell us about this effort that the president is making to secure our elections?
Well, look, this is a long overdue, much needed effort. And I think Will Scharf, when he was explaining the, kind of the contours of this executive order, hit on many of the high points. But look, I think it's important to put this in context, Annie. You had the Biden administration over the past 4+ years essentially weaponizing the federal government to try to turn it into a Democratic voter registration turnout machine, trying to weaponize essentially all aspects of the federal government to engage in these very problematic practices. And so what the Trump executive order does, it rescinds that previous Biden EO, but then it also directs the attorney general to enforce certain federal laws that are already on the books. And it also instructs the attorney general, the Department of Homeland Secretary, and others to take certain common sense steps to also remove barriers for states who want to use certain databases or other information to cross-check their voter rolls to make sure that only eligible voters are registered to vote. And all of those things, as far as I'm concerned, are very good policy steps for this administration to take.
Zach, in your opinion, like, what percentage of securing our elections, what percentage of fixing it needs to be clean voter rolls?
That is a large percentage of it, Annie. And, you know, some of the things that this EO does in particular, like allowing increased accessibility to certain databases, that is going to help that exponentially. But I think it's also important to recognize that this executive order, in part, orders the attorney general, other federal law enforcement agencies, to focus on states enforcing federal election laws in states that are not taking the steps that they should be taking. Election administration is primarily in the realm of a state authority. State legislatures have primary responsibility for administering their elections, but there is a role for the federal government to play. The Constitution provides that Congress can act as a backstop in certain instances. And so, again, I'm encouraged to see President Trump issue this EO.
We're speaking with legal fellow from Heritage Foundation, Zach Smith. You know, I understand. I remember Joe Biden and his administration wanting to kind of federalize our election system. And I remember conservatives being like, elections are supposed to be managed by the states. So does this cross over? Is it a conflict of interest now for the for the Trump administration to be saying, OK, across the board, all the states, here are the things you need to do?
No, it's not. And I would say that's not what this order does, Annie. You know, the big pushback we saw from several years ago was when House and Senate Democrats tried to pass H.R. 1 and Senate Bill 1, respectively, which, of course, was an effort to nationalize many aspects of federal election law, something that had never before been done in our nation's history. What this executive order that Donald Trump does, it essentially requires the attorney general to enforce current laws that Congress has already passed. It doesn't create a new law. And then to provide extra assistance to the states in administering their elections and in making sure that federal law is being enforced in those states that are not taking those common sense steps that are needed. So under this executive order, primary responsibility for election administration still resides with the states. This order respects that. It understands it, but is providing very necessary, very helpful federal resources to assist the states in their efforts.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zach, this is Ryan. Just listening to Will Scharf kind of explain the EO there at the beginning of the segment, it sounded like there was a lot packed into this one executive order. And so my question is that a strategy legally that they're trying to push through a lot in one? Because normally, don't you just focus on one particular thing per executive order?
No, not necessarily. And there is a lot, but I think it shows how many moving pieces there are in this election administration front. And so a lot of the actions that are, you know, that are occurring, being instructed to take place in this executive order, for instance, the president is ordering the attorney general to take several actions in several distinct areas. The same thing with the Secretary of Homeland Security, as well as other federal officials. And so while there are a lot of moving pieces to this EO, they all tie together in a very common sense way that will ultimately make our elections more safe and more secure at the end of the day.
So senior legal fellow Zach Smith with us right now. We're excited to have him in to talk about this executive order from the president of the United States. I'm curious how much legal challenge you expect to have, if any of this is, you know, just locked tight and is going to be able to be implemented. It seems like they put something out, everybody on Trump's side goes, hooray, we finally did it. And then the next day it's like, no, we didn't. And then we have activist judges and they get in the way. And then it's hard to say nothing happens because he's only been the president for 2 months once again. What is your thoughts on the legal challenges that will be faced with this EO?
Well, I have no doubt that legal challenges will be fired. It's almost a reflexive impulse at this point. Whenever the president issues an EO, there's kind of an army of left-leaning lawyers lined up to challenge it in some form or fashion. What's going to be interesting about this executive order, because so much of election law does take place in the states, because so much of election law is state-based, I suspect some of these challenges may come up in unique settings in state courts as opposed to federal courts, as we've seen in the past. And we'll also have to wait and see. The president ordered some specific actions to be taken with revisions to the federal form that's used to register voters and that sort of thing. And so I suspect we may see challenges come up at each piece of implementation of these policies along the way. But again, ultimately, I'm skeptical that those challenges will be successful, because essentially what this order, again, is trying to do is to order the Attorney General to enforce already existing on the books federal laws, and then to also provide certain resources and assistance to states in administering their own elections.
So, Zach, this is Ryan again. If this is already stuff that's on the books, I guess my question is, why is the EO necessary if it's just saying, well, this already exists?
Well, unfortunately, I think you saw the Biden administration refusing to enforce some common sense black letter laws that were already on the books, or even acting in defiance of some of those laws. And so one of the things this EO does, it repeals one of the Biden EOs that, again, tried to weaponize the entire federal government. So in part, this is reversing some of the damage, some of the undermining of the rule of law that happened under the Biden administration. The other issue that's taken place is that some courts, some departments within the federal government, the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, has historically been a very radical division of DOJ staffed with very left-leaning radical lawyers. I suspect Harmeet Dhillon, who is the new Assistant Attorney General in charge of that division, will correct some of those issues. But part of this EO is also necessary to correct some of the erroneous interpretations of law that division, other departments of the government, have taken as well. And so a lot of this is Donald Trump doing his best to set his house in order, and then to also take proactive steps to help make sure our elections are safe and secure moving forward.
We're speaking with Zach Smith right now. You are a co-host of SCOTUS 101. I'm curious on your thoughts of the current makeup of the Supreme Court. Donald Trump enjoys the appointment of, what, three of the justices that make up a third of the Supreme Court right now. Yet it seems as though some of the rulings that have come out don't necessarily favor Donald Trump as much as he certainly would like them to. How do you feel Donald Trump will fare with many of these cases, these challenges, if should they get to the Supreme Court? How do you think he'll fare with this current makeup of nine justices?
Well, I joke, Annie. My crystal ball is a little cloudy these days. I'm predicting outcomes at the Supreme Court. It's hard to say, truthfully. And look, I think two things to what you said. One, I think, you know, the fact that the supposedly conservative justices don't always agree with each other shows that originalism, textualism does not lead to monolithic outcomes. They are not politically driven results. So there are often, you know, differences in interpretation that the justices have and how they apply those originalist and textualist methods. The other thing I would say is it will be interesting to watch and see, because so far the court has had to avoid weighing in on the merits of many of these challenges due to procedural hurdles that have come up along the way. And I suspect the runway on those procedural hurdle objections are about to run out. And I suspect the court will have to take up some of these issues as they come before the justices. And the last thing I'll say on that front, you know, it'll be very interesting to watch and see what Justice Amy Coney Barrett does, particularly compared to some of our other conservative colleagues like Justice Gorsuch, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and then Justice Thomas and Justice Samuel Alito. There is some disagreement among some of the conservative justices on some of these issues, how they should be applied, what the court's role is in resolving these issues. So that will be a very interesting dynamic to watch play out.
Zach, I want to ask you a question about something that I didn't ask you ahead of time, your experience or expertise on this issue. So if you don't know a lot about this, just let us know and we can maybe revisit it another time. But part of this election EO talks about being able to show proof of citizenship and so on and so forth. And we had several people in our live chat that follows us on our Annie Fry YouTube channel talking about Real ID. I don't know how much you know about Real ID. Are you well versed in that?
I'm only familiar with the real ID at a 10,000 foot level. Essentially, I think, as I understand it, it requires states to confirm citizenship or other proof of identity before issuing a state ID. I know TSA is supposed to start requiring real ID before you can use your state identification card to board airplanes in the very near future. But look, Annie, fundamentally, what this comes down to is there needs to be some way to verify, other than just a person's bare assertion, that they are who they say they are, and that, in fact, they are not disqualified from voting. And so, you know, states obviously require the photo ID. Great. That's a good first step. Some states also require a specific voter ID number. Some states require the last four of a voter's social security number, particularly if those voters are voting by absentee ballots. So all of those types of measures are certainly steps in the right direction in making sure that the individual voting is who they say they are and that they are, in fact, eligible to cast that ballot.
Yeah, it just seems strange to me. Like, real ID seems a little more complicated to acquire than just getting, you know, a state-issued ID or a license. And it's just interesting to me that this mandate is being put out on real ID to say you need to have this, you know, more secure form of identification. But yet it's racist to suggest that people should be able to show free state-issued IDs to vote. I don't understand how both of those things can be advocated for at the same time.
No, I think it's a great point. I think it highlights the logical inconsistencies of the positions of many folks on the left. And look, if you look at the polling on showing voter ID, Annie, I don't think it will come as a surprise that vast majorities of voters across all demographics are very supportive of the idea that you should have to show ID or prove that you are who you say you are in some way before you're eligible to cast a ballot.
Well, we appreciate you, Zach. You are no second place to Hans von Spakovsky. We love him, and we love you as well, and we appreciate your time today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yep, of course. Bye-bye. Zach Smith, the legal fellow from Heritage Foundation, giving us a lowdown on the executive order coming out of the Trump administration, telling us about how he is going to tighten up and secure our election system. It's good to hear. And then I just pause and wait for all of the legal challenges to happen. So I guess we're probably in that phase right now. All right. When we come back, Ryan Wiggins with Wiggins America. Very, very key one today. What is it?
Science-backed ways to seem smarter than you are.
If only we could get an expert.
Yeah. I'm just reporting on this. I am smarter than I am.
Than you are. We'll be right back. It's Finch.